Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Curtis, what's the plan this weekend? What are you doing this weekend?
I don't know. I have to get stuff done, but I feel like everyone gets stuff done on the weekend now to where, like, the things that are open, I feel like are going to be really busy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get my haircut and stuff, but I think they'll be busy now.
Yeah, the haircut, that's going to take a couple weeks for that to kind of – actually, it's going to take a while. Everybody's going to be going to, you know, go get haircuts.
Is that what you're doing, Jess? No, I'm still going to wait. I'm going to wait until, like, it's absolutely necessary for me to get a haircut, because I wear a hat most of the times anyway. So I can do fine and get by with wearing a hat. But when it comes to, you know, say, like, going out to a restaurant, have, like, a date night, or, you know, if we go back to the station, something like that, I'm going to have to cut my hair.
But okay, halftime, we're going to talk restaurants. We'll talk restaurants. I want to get your guys' thoughts. Looks like restaurants have the ability to open up tonight, if I'm right, tonight. So we'll talk some restaurants. Don't give in too much there. Yeah. Take a look at some of those. But it is kind of weird, even now, as things do start opening up, it's still not normal at all. I'm trying to think, when does it become – it's not the right way to describe it. When do things become normal again? I don't think that's the right way to put it, but I do feel once you're out of the house more and that routine starts again at work, I feel like that to me will be the, yeah, we're sort of getting back to some kind of norm.
It's some form of normalcy, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's I think we're all just, you know, looking for is something to make it seem like we're closer to it.
A routine, back to kind of the routine that we're accustomed to.
Well, we talked about it. I think they didn't announce extending those stay-at-home orders, so I think it does expire over the weekend. So I think we'll be seeing more people out, because the mayor already did his thing. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more people out on the road on Monday.
Yeah, no, you could be right. Okay, so, and I forgot what traffic is, because I haven't been driving to any traffic. So I mentioned this, teased it for a quick second. Melvin Gordon was with Marcus Cromartie on Instagram Live. And, you know, I just spent some time talking about how no fans in games I think is going to help the Clippers. I really do. I think that, you know, the Lakers have just such a dominating fan base. If you have a 7-game set, it's all at Staples Center, it's going to benefit the Lakers. It's going to benefit the Lakers for a number of different reasons. And now all of a sudden that you're going to be in, you know, arenas or stadiums, and if everything's done at Disney World in Orlando and there's just the players and the coaches there and there's really nobody cheering, that takes away one of the strong advantages that a Laker fan base would have here in LA. So I think it is a little bit more of an equal playing field. Now, when you look at the NFL could be in a similar spot, right? We know that the NFL, by the time fall and winter roll around this year, and just a quick plug, because I think this will be a great conversation. Dan Graziano covers the NFL for ESPN coming up at 8:30. But for the NFL, they're also most likely going to be at their stadiums or at their, you know, their domes, and they're going to be playing with either very, very limited fans. But I don't even think that's going to be the case. I think they're going to be playing without fans. So Melvin Gordon, former Charger, now with the Denver Broncos, says that he's, let's just say he said that he's prepared with no fans.
We didn't have fans anyway.
Oh, man. Charger fans. They're not going to like it. Okay.
We didn't have many Charger fans at the game. I'm just being honest. We didn't have many Charger fans at the game. You know, much loyalty, love, but we ain't had many. So I'm not missing anything. So I ain't really.
Oh, man.
Shots fired.
That's so funny to me, because first of all, it's hilarious just because there's another player saying it, but it's freaking true. You know, what do you want him to say? You want him to, you know, BS and say that Dignity Health Stadium or Arena or whatever it's called was packed with Charger fans? It wasn't. Everybody knows it wasn't. And I just think it is kind of comical as we talk about arenas or stadiums that have no fans moving forward for at least the near future. How that will feel, what will that be like for Melvin Gordon, who's now going to be playing for the Denver Broncos, you know, was a Los Angeles Charger, he's had some practice. He's good to go. He doesn't have to worry about that. I will also hit on this. Whenever fans do come back and SoFi Stadium is packed with fans, because eventually there's going to be an incredible attraction to go out to SoFi Stadium, because it's this unbelievable $5 billion stadium, state-of-the-art stadium that they're building, obviously, in Inglewood. When they do come back, not good for Chargers. Can't be good. What do you think, Curtis, what do you think it's going to look like when the Chargers take on the Las Vegas Raiders from SoFi Stadium in Inglewood when fans are allowed back in the stadium? What do you think that's going to look like, Curtis?
You'll see a lot of black and silver face masks.
Curtis, can you imagine? I mean, just so think, about 70, on it. Think about that. 70,000 fans coming to this. Like I said, there's going to be just naturally an attraction to just come to the stadium because you want to see it. You know, it's such an amazing stadium, and at some point, it looks like, I think they're targeting now that it will be done by August. I think that's the last thing I read. Can you imagine when they're playing the Las Vegas Raiders in Los Angeles and it's the Chargers and the Raiders? I mean, it's going to be obviously predominantly silver and black. Even when you start playing the Cowboys, the Green Bay Packers, you know, these fan bases that travel well and they want to come out and spend a week in L.A., it is going to be tough, let's just say that, for the Chargers. And I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon. You know, and I don't need to spend too much time on this conversation about the Chargers, but definitely when I heard this in regards to Melvin Gordon, I 100% wanted to spend some time with it. But for me personally, this is definitely going to be one of those it's not going to be fixed overnight. It's just not. And it's not going to be a predicament or situation for the Chargers unless they just – I don't know if they hit you know, lightning in a bottle, and no pun intended. But unless something happened where there was some type of star that represented the Los Angeles Chargers and kind of just swept the city. But damn, I just don't see it. You know, you already have your fan base with the Rams and, like I mentioned, some of these other teams. Jess, are you by the way, I'll ask both of you guys this question in regards to SoFi Stadium. Has there ever been a stadium that you're more anticipating or more looking forward to just going and seeing? Like, I can't wait. I'm not going to do it now or anytime soon, but I can't wait for that opportunity to go see SoFi. I've been to Levi Stadium up in the Bay Area, and when that opened up, I mean, I think I went to one of the oh, you know which game I went to? I went Rams-Niners. It was a Monday night game, and I think it was Rams' first game back in L.A. You guys know what I'm talking about? You guys remember that a couple years ago?
It was the first season back, and they opened their season up in Santa Clara where the stadium's at. Is that what you mean?
Ridiculous stadium. Like, beautiful, right?
I blacked out the Jeff Fisher seasons of my head, so I don't remember what you're talking about.
But a beautiful, beautiful stadium. What they're building in Inglewood, that's completely next level. Like, I've never anticipated for myself personally looking so forward to seeing a stadium opening up.
Yeah, that and the stadium in Las Vegas are two that I'm really excited to go.
Vegas, I don't even think is anywhere near the amount of expenditure that they're spending here in LA for
SoFi. In Vegas, they're building a football stadium.
They're building the Death Star. It looks like it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In Inglewood, they're building a complex because they don't mm-hmm. expect, nor do they just want football. They want it to be an entertainment district. So it's going to be.
And it will be
football. Oh yeah,
it will be. I mean, this is. I know it sounds funny to say, "Oh, this is just step one," because this is a humongous step, but it is step one. There's that will continue to grow out there, and. You know, SoFi, obviously, and just that whole Inglewood area will eventually become an attraction. Okay, Jalen Rose was on First Take. He's talking specifically about finishing out the season and if we should look at the season any different when it's all said and done. You know, all that conversation, all that chatter about Should there be an asterisk when this season is complete? Jalen Rose gives his thoughts on that, and we'll definitely chat about that as well. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. So, Jess, a couple days ago, you got credit for some music, right?
I did.
Remember that, Jess?
Okay. I did. I remember. It was a great song that I chose, yep. And I stand by it.
And then tonight, at @Brett_Kane.
Oh, what does Brett got to say?
Sliwa, that reggae intro music is fire, my man.
How do you do it, Jess?
So straight fuego. That is two different occasions we're getting credit where Curtis is actually running the board and choosing all the music.
That's going to be my obituary right there.
Chooser.
That's awesome.
Curtis Poindexter.
Here's I think where we are. Okay, we got the NBA looking to potentially come back, and they need about another week or so, less than a week, and there'll be some kind of vote. It looks like on Thursday is when the vote will come from the NBA. We have Major League Baseball. We have absolutely no idea what Major League Baseball is doing and when they're coming back. None at all, right? Like, if they're coming back at all, they are going to get buried if the NBA returns and they don't. Like, if I said this, if you guys remember earlier in the week, I said, I think they're all going to come back or they won't. And what I mean by that is, and all indications are looking that the NBA will, but there's too much to lose, like from a public perspective and just the perception from a public view. If the NBA came back and Major League Baseball found a way not to come back, that's going to be so detrimental to their business, to their sport, and to their future. It's my opinion. Some people would say, no, they'll be fine. People will forget about it in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever the case is. And they might be right. But I just think that it will be detrimental to their business. Now, if the NBA didn't come back, then it's a lot easier for Major League Baseball to just sit back and say, okay, well, that didn't work out anyway, so we're good. We're not going to look as bad as, you know, we would have. But I think all indications are showing that the NBA is going to return. But it's just comical to me. It really is. It's comical to me to see that this is baseball again, just being in that position where all the other sports look sort of prepared and baseball does not look prepared at all. At least that's been that's certainly been the perception. Next week is a big time week for Major League Baseball. We'll definitely be able to find out. There is some good news. I mean, if you want to be a player out there, and I know some players have voiced their opinion. They've done it on Twitter. They've done it on Twitch. They've done it probably on Instagram. We've heard certain players have certain comments about what's going on in the league. But David Price of the Dodgers, he found a completely different way to make the news. And this is Alden Gonzalez, ESPN staff writer on ESPN.com. I'm just going to read this just one little paragraph because I think it's key. And I think, you know, if you're a Dodger fan out there, you could be proud about David Price, who has not thrown one official pitch yet for the Los Angeles Dodgers. What I'm referring to there is we haven't played a regular season game. So David Price, who probably be third in the rotation, somewhere around there. I think most people think he's going to be third. So the All-Star left-hander will give each minor league player who is not on the Dodgers 40-man roster $1,000 for the month of June. Sources confirmed to ESPN, the act of generosity will impact just over 200 people facing unprecedented difficulty during the coronavirus pandemic. So if you want to, as much as, and I'm guilty of it too, there's a lot of times I hit on stories that, you know, maybe don't play a player or an owner or a commissioner in the best perspective. That happens. And I do that too much. And I don't think that's uncommon. I think in sports, we're quick to, you know, judge and we're quick to say, why is this player doing this? Why is that player doing that? How about David Price? How about David Price of the Dodgers, who we know how incredibly impacted the minor league system is for baseball because of coronavirus, the pandemic that's been going on. And by the way, you know, when we say the minor league system, I know it's so easy to just tell what's the big deal. It's just the minor league system. No, the minor league system is the future of Major League Baseball. That's why it's called the minor league system. And it's different than, I don't want to compare it to the G League, because I think in the G League, it's less common to be cropping up players, getting them ready. They go through the system and then boom, they end up, playing for the NBA and they're on the Lakers squad and they're the best player on your team, or, you know, top two, three players on your squad. Not to say that that can't happen, but that's just not how currently the G League is constructed. And maybe that changes as more high school players choose this G League program over college, over college schools or over Europe. The minor league system for baseball is everything. It's everything. It's one of the main reasons why the Dodgers are talked about to not just have such an unbelievable present, but a great future as well. It's because of their minor league system. And here's a pitcher that wasn't sitting on Twitch, wasn't throwing out some post on Twitter, wasn't, you know, screaming from the top of his lungs on some type of social media platform, complaining about this, complaining about that. I didn't hear anything from David Price. But you know what I saw? I saw that this individual for the Dodgers, who has yet to play a regular season game, for the Dodgers, I saw him give $1,000 for the month of June to just over 200 people who are part of the minor league system. Come on now. How fantastic is that? That's something we should be highlighting and that we should be talking about. So that's great to see that today. When I read that article, Jesse and I were doing our prep, and you know, he mentioned that to me. So obviously, got a chance to read the story. That's a great story. Those are the type of things that, you know, we should be highlighting more, especially right now. I don't know what the hell's going on in the world right now. I mean, you turn on the news and you flip on whatever channel you want. You go on Twitter, you spend 5 minutes on there, you walk away, you probably don't feel that good about what's going on. This is a great story. So kudos to David Price. Maybe there's some other players that kind of look and see, hey, what a great opportunity to take care of somebody. And it doesn't have to be this. It could be anything. I mean, and it's not applying just to baseball players. It could be me. It could be Jesse. It could be Chris. It could be any of us that try to do something for another person. But fantastic move from David Price. And if you're a Dodger fan out there, you should be proud of what David Price did. All right, halftime coming up next. I appreciate you guys tuning in. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
I like that, Curtis. There was a little like lead up to you getting the music.
You know, it was like just, that second of suspense.
Yeah, you know how when you just get so accustomed to certain things where you're just expecting something right there? That suspense was solid.
Thanks for pointing out that I missed that.
I appreciate it. No, it wasn't missing.
Oh, I missed it. That's what it was.
Yeah, okay, you screwed it up.
I thought I disconnected. I thought at the exact moment the rerun ended, I thought disconnected. I was like, oh boy, here we go.
100%. That was
and
it.
And I hear the music and I was like, oh no, I'm good. We're good. Curtis just, you know, he was playing on us a little bit. He played us.
Okay.
Played
so, us. So here we are on a Friday. We only worked 4 days this week. How fast did this week go by just strictly because we only had four shows? Just me, or did it feel like it just flew by?
It did kind of fly by, but to be honest, all these days kind of mix and mesh together. I feel like every day is, especially with like no real new news besides today has been coming out. But it's just, mm-hmm. They're all like kind of meshed and weirdly blended together. But this week did go a little quick.
Okay, let's, Jess, why don't you start things off?
All right. So, we talked earlier. The name Josh Gad, he is And he was an actor. He kind of got his fame in working in the Book of Mormon. He's the voice of Olaf. He is, I forgot this character's name in Beauty and the Beast. He's a big time actor, and he's doing something really cool. While we're all quarantined, he has a YouTube show called Reunite. And he's been reuniting a lot of different movie casts together. The first one, he reunited the Goonies. Like 2 weeks ago, he reunited the entire cast of Back to the Future, Marty McFly, Emmett Brown, everyone. And
what's this thing called? This is on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's okay. Josh Gad. Here, let me get you the official
YouTube channel.
Yeah, his official. Because I don't know if it's on his personal.
Josh Gad. Yep, it's on his own.
Reunited Apart. That's what it's called. It's on his own personal YouTube channel. And this weekend, I think he has one of the biggest casts coming up. He's reuniting almost the entire cast of The Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
Frodo, Sam.
Gandalf, by the way.
Legolas.
He's got some big time views here too. 1.3 million. He did Back to the Future. Was 2 million.
Back to the Future
views.
Was a good one. I saw that one. So that he's doing something really cool. So if you have, it brings up all the nostalgia. My girlfriend is a humongous Lord of the Rings fan, and she told me I'm going to be up at, I think this one drops at 9 a.m. on Sunday. She's going to be up and ready for that to drop, to watch it as soon as it drops. So my question for you guys is, if you were Josh Gad's producer, if you had a chance to, you know, offer some suggestions to him, what movie casts would you want him to reunite?
Okay, that's... Curtis, if you got one right off the top of your head. I got a couple. Actually, I think I got a couple. But Curtis, you got something?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of them aren't with us anymore. But the first thing I thought of was the original Star Wars cast, the main group. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's a good one.
Fortunately, a few of the parts aren't around anymore. And
okay, can it be any movie? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, any
right?
movie. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
I think bringing back some of, you know, one of the Rockies.
That'd be good.
I think that would be a good one. Bringing back The Godfather, getting back some of those, you know, obviously those actors. Trying to think what else would be a good one.
I got a good couple fellas, good ones for
good,
you.
Goodfellas, but that's, you know, very similar to Godfather. What do you have, Jess?
So I asked my girlfriend this too, and she started looking at her movies, but she threw two good ones out that I thought were really good. One was Little Rascals.
Okay.
And the second one was the Breakfast Club. And I thought those were two. And then the one that I had thought of personally was Rush Hour.
How about Coming to America? That'd be a good one.
Oh, that's another good one.
If you got the cast back of Coming to America, Arsenio Hall,
Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd.
I will say, I'm trying to think off the top of my head here. What's the other movie I'm thinking of? I'm trying to think of the old movie. I don't have another one off the top of my head. But those are, I mean, first of all, the concept that what he's doing is genius. Like, just that thought process of doing what he's doing and how he's doing it. I love the concept of bringing back old movies. By the way, would even some of these movies that were back in 2000, what if he brought back Old School and it was Vince Vaughn and it was Will Ferrell? I think those would be entertaining too. Anybody there with me? Or is it just me?
I was waiting. I didn't know...
I think we lost Jesse.
Yeah. Usually I have to wait to let it, because he's got a little delay. So I was like, all right, let's see. But I don't know.
No, I think he's gone.
I'm going to leave him on, and then if he reconnects, we'll have him. But
Curtis, what do you have over there? Give me your idea that you had.
Yeah, so I was...
By the way, did he say Dan Aykroyd on Coming to America?
Yeah.
Am I missing something here? I don't remember Aykroyd.
I can't remember either, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I definitely don't remember Dan Aykroyd on Coming to America.
when he first said that, I was like, wait, what is he talking about?
Ghostbusters?
Maybe? All right, go. Yeah, that's a good what crew, I thought
actually.
You
Ghostbusters
crew.
Ghostbusters
actually, would be a good one. That would be a good one. Okay, what do you got there?
All right, well, Jess is going to miss out on this one. I know he would enjoy this, but so the other day, there was a story I saw. Three young boys wound up hospitalized the other day. That's not the funny part, but they
definitely not the funny part.
No.
Okay,
they were messing around, you know, doing as kids do. Apparently, they had let a black widow bite them, all three of them.
No way. Yeah, that's really what they did.
They let a spider bite them. Because they thought they could gain powers like Spider-Man, because that's how Peter Parker.
How old were the kids?
Got his powers. It doesn't say, but I mean, they said young boys. So I'm guessing, you know.
First of all, I don't care how young you are. The fact that you have the courage to let a black widow bite you—that's an awful idea, but pretty damn impressive in itself. How the hell they have the courage to do that?
I don't know, man.
Would you be able to do that?
No, I had the hell other night. No. I had a thing that looked like a not a roach, but like maybe a cricket or something. And I was like, yo, I gotta get this thing out of here real quick. Like, and they
no, of course you do,
played
but
with a spider kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, it's what kids do. You know, it kind of leads to this. It's, you know, when you're little, when you do stuff like that, you don't realize what you're doing most
of course
the time.
Not. And but obviously, I'm telling you, even as a young kid, I would be scared out of my you know what just freaking thinking of letting a black widow bite me. Okay, but keep going with your story.
So it just had me thinking. I kind of tried to think of. Actually, hold on. I think we might have Jess back. Let's see.
Okay. All right.
This is why. It is not.
Jess, were you talking? Jess, were you talking the whole time, not knowing that you were disconnected?
No. Luckily, you were talking, and you like sputtered out for a second, and I was like, "Oh, looks like we're taking a dip," and then just went dead quiet.
Yeah, there was a very awkward silence. Like,
okay,
I wanted to let you respond.
Jess, I gotta go back. Did you see Dan Aykroyd was in Coming to America?
Wasn't he? Am I thinking of a different movie?
I think you're thinking literally
I was saying
of
maybe
a,
you're thinking Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. That's weird.
No, isn't
but
it,
Ghostbusters and Coming to America, not exactly
isn't
the
Eddie
same one.
Isn't Eddie Murphy in a movie with Dan Aykroyd, though?
Check that.
I'm going to check that right now, because I think he is.
They might be in a movie together, and it's definitely not Coming to America. Was he in...
Oh, Trading Places.
Trading Places. Trading
That's
Places.
The one, Trading Places.
You threw me off so bad, I'm like...
I threw myself off.
In my head,
I was kind of thinking about it. I was like, "Is that the right movie?"
But in my head, I'm saying to myself, "I'm like, how do I not remember if Dan Aykroyd wasn't Coming to America?" But I'm like, "No way, he wasn't Coming to America."
It was so wrong that it destroyed your connection with us.
So you came, you came at a perfect time because Curtis was just explaining that there were three kids that allowed a black widow to bite them because they thought they would gain superpowers.
Oh, and, super.
Yep. And go ahead and
Spider-Man,
take it from there,
not
Curtis.
Superman, Jesse. So I
see what you did there.
Yeah, so we were in the middle of kind of discussing, as a kid, you do stuff that, you know, in retrospect, maybe you shouldn't have done. Because as a kid, you don't realize what you're doing until the consequence. That's how a lot of kids end up in the ER with something stuck in their nose and all that stuff. But is there something either one of you have... that you regret doing as a kid, something stupid like that?
I think I got one. Jess, you got one?
I got one.
All right, why don't you go first?
All right, I got two. I'm gonna tease one, and maybe I'll tell it one day. I jumped in front of a car in a race to get shotgun at one point. The people that were involved don't know that I know the full story, but I've known the full story for years. I've never told anyone. But I'm not going to go with that because, like I said, there's some people that don't know. And let's just leave it like that. So even when I was younger, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8, I somehow put a popcorn kernel in my ear. I don't remember what was my reasoning for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I just wanted to see if it fit or what. But I remember I put it in there and it got stuck in there. And it was pretty late at night, and I remember my mom took me to several different hospitals, urgent care clinics, to try to get it out. And I went to like 3 or 4 and none of them were like, we don't know what to do. And it wasn't until like that 3rd or 4th one where the doctor had the brilliant idea of just dropping water in my ear and then tilting my head out. And the kernel just kind of rolled out. But I had it in there for quite some time. My sister still makes fun of me for it, and I just take the L because I'm just like, I don't know. I don't remember what my reasoning or anything for it. But yeah, that's definitely that one time. It's like a popcorn kernel. It might still be in there. Maybe I threw more one in there.
We understand everything now. We understand everything. Okay, I think
everything makes sense for you now.
I think I got one.
You need more time to think. I have one too.
Went to a park. It was, I think, like a field trip day or something along those lines, you know, when I was a kid. I couldn't have probably been maybe 10 years old or something along those lines. And one of the things that they told us was don't climb trees, okay? Like, don't try and climb a tree. That was kind of one of their rules, was just to make sure, let's limit the amount of injuries we're going to have on this field trip. Kids, don't climb the tree.
That sounds pretty reasonable.
And I don't even know, like, definitely I wasn't the only one, and definitely I wasn't the first one. I followed into some path, but a couple of the kids climbed the tree, and I'm like, eh, what's the harm? You know, just go up a little bit of a tree, and let me just kind of paint the picture. It's not like, you know, I'm a incredibly athletic kid that's just going right up these trees, no problem. No, that's not the case. So I somehow found a way to get up on a tree, and was just kind of sitting there, and in my mind, not really kind of thinking, well, how am I going to get down? Eventually, literally fell off the tree just on my shoulder, directly on my shoulder. Felt like I broke my arm. And
oh, dear.
I don't know if you guys know how if you could relate to this, but I know for me and my family growing up, it's not like we were going to the doctor all the time. And my parents, who are immigrants, came to this country. That's not something that you do all the time. You just go to the doctor. So I remember going home, telling my mom, like, I literally cannot move my arm. I think I broke it. She's like, for sure. Why don't you throw some ice on that bad boy? I'll put it in a sling for you. Like, she knows what she's doing. And she didn't. And it was like, go sit in the room and hopefully you feel better. Yeah, let's just say that didn't go away for a while until it finally felt better. So probably not the best idea to be climbing up that tree.
I remember something similar happened to me one time. I was playing football. I went up for an epic catch, but kind of landed really hard on my shoulder. And I just remember I couldn't move my shoulder after that. Luckily, it wasn't a break or anything. It was like a slight dislocation, which I still have now. Part of my shoulder kind of pops out from time to time. But I can understand having that fear. And I was the same way. My mom's an immigrant. Only my mom was a... She had learned because I'm the youngest of three. So she learned from sibling one and sibling two to, you know what? He's hurt. We should probably take him to the doctor.
I was sibling three too. My mom definitely was good. She's like, yeah, I learned nothing. I'm going to do the same thing I've been doing for the other two kids. Curtis, what do you got?
Well, we're speaking of siblings here. I'm the oldest. Mm-hmm. So I have two younger sisters. We're all about 4 years apart from each other. I was the one that always had to watch the others when parents went to go do something. And I forgot, I don't remember how, I think I was 10, 11. I thought I saw, I don't know how I got this idea, but I was playing with a match because I saw that, you know how you can like lick your fingers and you know how you can suffocate a fire out, a little light.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like kind of tipping your fingers together on the match.
Yeah, I always wanted to do that. My middle sister, I'm like, hey, check this out. So I do it and she gets in real close. And I went to go pinch it, and all of a sudden I lit her. She had her bangs. Her bangs came down a little bit because this is early '90s when bangs were the thing. So she had a little bit of her hair.
Was it during She Bangs?
No,
Ricky Martin.
But she had a little bit of her hair lit on fire, really quick. we quickly ran and got it out, but it was enough to singe her ear a little bit. I still feel bad. I don't know what I thought I was doing.
All right, yeah, Curtis, no more of this. Yeah, you gotta take care of your sister here, man.
I was just trying to show her a cool trick. I didn't do it on purpose.
No, taking care of your sister means taking care of your sister, not taking care of your sister, Curtis. Come on.
Oh, that explains a lot.
Okay, so tonight,
We got word, so I'm going to read it. County officials today laid out a few more specifics for the broad reopening of restaurants, dining rooms in LA. So basically, there's a lot of protocols, but restaurants are going to start opening at some capacity, and they obviously have to follow a lot of the rules. I mentioned this last week. I was in San Diego, and restaurants started opening there. So it's going to be kind of similar protocols that we're sort of accustomed to. Spacing tables at least 6 feet apart. That's the social distancing. Shifting dining room capacity at 60% for the next 3 weeks. So we'll see how much that changes over time. So that's just kind of name a few of them there. So this is a question I asked to the both of you. Thinking of all the unbelievable great restaurants here in Los Angeles, when you do decide to go back and dine at a restaurant, and you know, considering now that it's almost been 3 months that we haven't had that opportunity, a lot of the food's coming from takeout, which God bless takeout, it's been great, but of course you go to try and get some good food, the quality when it just comes out of the kitchen is much different than when it's sitting there, you pick it up and you go home. When you do go back to a restaurant, what is the first restaurant that you want to go back to and dine at? And this is probably, I'm assuming, going to be a restaurant that you've been to before, and you've obviously had some great experiences there. It could be anything you want. It could be a chain. It could be a small spot, hole in the wall. Curtis, why don't you start things off?
Over by, there's a few in Ventura County. I don't know how far out they go over here, but Topper's Pizza, there's only a few of them. It's it's the same. It's this one spot. Down in Ventura.
Topper's Pizza. Ventura County. Let's take a look. Okay.
I know there's three. I don't know how far out they go. I don't know how close to over here they get, but that was always the spot when one of my buddies who's out of town is back in visiting. That's where we go meet up. You know what I mean? Go catch up with somebody. That was the spot. And coincidentally, I have a couple friends who are back in town and came in right when all this happened and haven't gotten to see them. So it's kind of it's more the place to go because that's where we all kind of meet up. But that's my first spot.
You know which spot I thought you were going to say?
What was that?
Pasquale's Pizza and Wings.
Oh.
Oh, that was going to be mine.
I thought 100%.
Pasquale's is down the street because we also have a Chuck E. Cheese. So.
Okay, so you're going to go. So you're going to go dine, grab some pizza. That's a perfect place.
And a pitcher of brew.
I was going to say perfect place to kick back with a buddy of yours, catch up, grab some beer and some pizza.
There's like four arcade machines for the last 20 years.
That's awesome. That sounds like a great place to go to make your official return back to a restaurant. Jess, where are you going? Where do you thinking? I'm assuming you're probably taking the lady with you. What are you thinking?
Oh, yeah. So there's a good, delicious, bomb vegan food place in Pasadena. There's also one in Echo Park and in Culver
City.
What's it called? It's called Sage Bistro.
Oh, it's a fantastic spot.
Oh, I love their buffalo cauliflower wings are to die. I could eat that every day.
I'm surprised you went with a vegan spot, which by the way, I'm not vegan. I just ate meat right now. But vegan restaurants are fantastic. I mean, I like that food. I could eat that anytime. It's just a different type of food. Obviously, the ingredients that they're using. But so you're going with Sage Vegan Bistro. That's the spot that you're going to.
You know, we've talked about food for like three of our four halftimes, and I'm angry every time after we leave.
That's why I eat after the show about every day.
Curtis, it's one of those things where as we get towards the evening, this is just kind of how it goes. Okay, so you're going vegan. Wasn't expecting that. You're going pizza and some beer. Probably expecting that. Okay, so to sit, get the dining experience. Okay, I got a couple. I tried one time doing a good steak, and it was takeout. Okay.
Okay.
And it wasn't, you know, it was a.
It's never the
very,
same.
It was a very good restaurant, and you know, I got a good cut of what the heck was it? I'm drawing a blank here. Tomahawk steak. It was one of their big steaks. But listen, I only did it because It was a friend of mine. Her and I were going to grab a good steak, but it was the idea was, bro, I haven't been spending anything. Like, I haven't. When you're right now sitting at home, the way you kind of would spend in the past, whether it's gas money, whether it's just going out, whether it's catching up with people, I haven't been. So it's like, okay, let's go get some good food. But the quality of the food, especially that kind of food, by the time you get home, it's like you feel, man, this was a waste. That experience of getting a steak is specifically made for in dining. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like that you can't. I mean, pizza's great all the time. You order it, you cook it, whatever it is, right? Exactly. It doesn't matter. Pizza's great. But steak, that's different. So my favorite steak is Mastro's. That's my favorite steak. I think that's, you know, and I'm sure there's great steak spots all over the place, but Mastro's my favorite. So if I go to one spot, you get a chance to kind of kick back. You're finally getting a chance to dine in at a restaurant because of the quality of the food and how just a good steak, how much better it is when, you know, it's part of that in-dining experience. I think I'm going steak. I think I'm doing some Mastro's. And trust me, there's about 30 pizza spots that I want to do, but I figure pizza you could do anytime, and it's there's no pizza to me that's bad, you know?
Oh, I agree. Except the ones with pineapples on it.
Curtis, I have a mute button, Jesse.
Curtis, you do.
I'll turn you right down.
Curtis, you do pineapple on your pizza too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Curtis is all in.
Pineapple and jalapeno.
Well, we know you did it on your hamburger.
Pizza too.
Mm. Okay, pizza too.
You know what? So I'm going to get away from this.
That's what I think I'm going with. Yeah, that's what I think I'm going with.
For that same reason why you don't like steak, you know, to go or delivery or whatever, is the same reason why I will never bring In-N-Out back home. It loses the taste. If I eat In-N-Out, I either eat in the parking lot or eat inside. I don't bring it back here because the second you drive it back to your house, it's just different. So listen,
there's certain food, like I love ramen, right? How good is ramen? But ramen, you need to be there. You need to be sitting there. And don't be wrong.
Ramen creates a certain kind of atmosphere that you need to be surrounded
by. I've ordered ramen here to the house, but there's something also about it comes out piping hot. The noodles had time to sit in the in the broth or whatever the case is. So there's certain foods that you just have to do it like that.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, fellas, good work. I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the show. So Dan Grazian, who covers the NFL for ESPN, we'll switch gears. Covers the NFL for ESPN. Switch gears a little bit. We hit a lot on the NBA, and the NFL yesterday had some of their new rules that came out. Onside kick. There were some ideas in place of the onside kick, which I was actually rooting for. That's not happening. So Dan Graziano will go through some of the new rules, that pass interference replay, why that one's ousted as well. What exactly this Sean Payton has talked a few different times about having a sky judge, and some coaches like that idea. So we'll get into all that. We'll do that coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Dan Graziano covers the NFL for ESPN. Nice enough to take some time and join the show. Dan, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Oh, it's good. I think it's nice as we sit here on a Friday and, you know, from a sports perspective and literally just talking from a sports perspective every single day trying to get, different news and see if there's some type of movement on a lot of these, whether it's Major League Baseball or NBA. So it's definitely been a busy couple of weeks, and hopefully the NFL not too far behind as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're behind, but that's a good thing for them, right? Because they're not this didn't happen during the middle of their season like it did with baseball and basketball. And so the NFL has the luxury of time and the luxury of being able to watch other sports and how they handle their return. You know, the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NHL, but also, you know, the German Soccer League that started up again 2 weeks ago, the Premier League that announced, I think, today or yesterday that it was starting up again in a couple of weeks. So I know that the NFL executives and the NFL players and the Players Association are in touch with people in all those leagues and talking about return to play protocols and how to do it safely and how to do it responsibly. So yes, from the NFL standpoint, you know, to the extent that anyone has been through all of this, I mean, they've kind of gotten lucky in that they haven't had to postpone or cancel anything in terms of regular season games the way other leagues have dealt with.
Dan, you had an interesting tweet. I think it was yesterday. It might have been the day before. You were making some comparisons to what's happening in baseball right now that, you know, the NFL should pay close attention. Can you, for those who didn't get a chance to read the tweet and gives you kind of a chance to elaborate a little bit more on that, what's happening in baseball, what are some of the parallels that you see could be a similar effect for the NFL?
Well, I think what's happening in baseball is owners and players trying to get together on core economic issues before, you know, settling on a return to play, and that includes, you know, what the players are going to make, how much they should make, you know, et cetera. And there's obviously a dispute about that. Anybody who's been following it knows that, you know, each side has kind of put its point of view out there and in terms of the way they feel about the other side's proposals, et cetera. The NFL is going to have a conversation like that at some point between owners and players. It'll be a little bit different because the NFL's collective bargaining agreement doesn't, you know, it's not exactly the same as baseball's in terms of what the owners are able to do with regard to player salaries in the event of something unforeseen like this. But I think there's a sense among NFL owners and teams that if there's significant revenue loss in 2020, that they have to have a conversation with the players about what that means for beyond 2020. Does the salary cap for 2021 have to be adjusted downward? Are there mechanisms that they can put in place to keep salary cap growth even or continue to grow it even if they do lose revenue this year? How much revenue are they going to lose if they have to play in empty stadiums or partially filled stadiums? So I think there's a sense you'll see something that Major League Baseball owners seem to be telling the players, hey, we need you to help us or help share the pain with us in terms of lost revenue. I think there's going to be a conversation like that in the NFL as well in terms of how contentious it is, how potentially threatening it is to a season. I'm not sure it's an apples to apples comparison with baseball, but there will be that kind of conversation in terms of, hey, we're going to take some of these losses. What can we do about it as a group?
Dan Graziano covers the NFL for ESPN, joining the Sliwa Show. Dan, how is that? Just out of curiosity, I think it's been very public of how the relationship is between the players, the union, and obviously the owners. The NBA, it feels like there's a lot more unity. How is that relationship in the NFL?
Well, it's been, you know, contentious. Anybody who will think back to February and March, and remember the NFL's collective bargaining negotiations, knows that it's not always easy in terms of the relationship between the union and management. Now, I mean, I think that's true to some extent in all the sports, but, you know, we'll see in terms of this. We'll see whether what management wants the players to do is something that they find onerous or not, right? I think it seems clear that the Major League Baseball players are not happy with the owner's idea for how to compensate them for a partial season. There are issues on which the NFL and its Players Association have gotten to agreement quickly, and there are issues on which the owners and the players have not reached agreement quickly. It's been more contentious. Which of these that will be probably depends on how much the owners plan to ask, right? So if the players feel like what the owners are proposing in terms of, you know, what happens to the salary cap next year, for example, is outside of what they've negotiated in the collective bargaining agreement, then there's going to be pushback. But it's a little different situation. The owners and the players in the NFL are locked into a revenue sharing agreement. There are specified percentages of how much of revenue the players get and how much the owners get to keep. So there will be parameters in place that will govern those discussions, I think, in a more sort of amicable way. I just think it's important for fans to pay attention to what's going on in baseball, because I think something similar in terms of an economic discussion between players and owners is on the horizon at some point in terms of the NFL, and I don't know for a fact how it's going to turn out.
Dan, we had, and actually just reading your article yesterday, some of the rule changes that the NFL are going to implement, some that aren't going to happen. Just your quick thoughts. Did you like that idea of the onside kick where the, well, the onside kick obviously going away, but now it's staying the same. I know it was a unique idea. I think sometimes maybe if it's too different, if it's too bold of a move, yeah, it's easy for, you know, a lot of these, just kind of do the same thing over again. What was your thoughts on, first of all, that initial idea in place of the onside kick? And were you surprised that the NFL is saying, no, no, let's keep the onside kick in action?
Well, look, second part first, I was not surprised that it didn't pass. I mean, the NFL is slow to move on some of these sort of drastic innovations, and they do tend to worry a little bit about being too drastic. So the way I view this situation is the NFL owners have had conversations for years about the kickoff play itself, right? Is it unsafe? Is it too unsafe? You've seen them make adjustments to the kickoff, how players can align on kickoffs, where they can go, when they can start running, et cetera. The kickoff remains a relatively unsafe play relative to others. And if it continues to be a play on which they see a higher incidence of concussions, which they have in the past, then they'll probably move at some point to do away with it. If they do that, there's a legitimate question to be asked about, well, wait a minute, then now I can't kick on sides anymore because there's no such thing as a kickoff. So how do I, if I'm down by 14 points and late in the fourth quarter and I score, is there no mechanism for me to keep the ball as there was with an onside kick? So to me, I think this is a proposal designed to address that question when and if the kickoff becomes a play that either gets more strictly limited or eliminated completely. And if that's the case, you want teams to have some sort of mechanism for, yes, you can keep the ball, you can continue, you know, you still have a chance to come back. So I think it's something that's of interest to enough teams and owners that will continue to be discussed in the coming years. And it may be that at some point it gets adopted while the kickoff is still a play, but because of the changes they've made to the kickoff rule in recent years, onside kicks are much, much, much more difficult to recover than they used to be. So this may be a way to sort of bring back in the notion of a team can make a miracle comeback even though they're down by multiple scores in the final minutes. So I think it's of interest. I just think they have to hammer out some more details. I know there was concern about, you know, it's an untimed down. What if you it started at your own 25? What if you score on the play? Now you've gone 75 yards and scored a touchdown on an untimed down. Is that fair? So I think they have to figure out some more of the details before it's fully formed. But it's the second year in a row it's been proposed by teams, and I think it's something to keep an eye on going forward. In some form or fashion, it could very well become reality in the coming years.
Dan, what's the thought process? Dan Graziano covers the NFL for ESPN, joined the Sleeper Show. What's the thought process on the pass interference replay review? What happened there? What are some of the reasons why you think they're taking away that concept of it? And I know there's been a lot of chatter. Sean Payne, I know, had some comments about some type of a sky judge. Can you explain to those that maybe don't understand the full details of it? Your article laid it out great for those who haven't got a chance to read it.
So last year, after the Saints got robbed out of the NFC Championship game by a no-call, non-pass interference call, Sean Payton, the coach of the Saints, led a charge for to make pass interference a reviewable play. And they did it on a one-year trial basis, proved it. And the owners never wanted to do it. The owners don't generally favor more replay because the owners view their product as an entertainment product, and they want to make sure it remains watchable. Nobody likes to sit through replay reviews. It slows the game down, and it's not very entertaining. Coaches and players, they care a lot more about, like, you know, getting the call right. Coach wouldn't mind if the game take 8 hours if every single call was right and reviewed. But the owners don't feel the same way because, again, they're trying to sell an entertainment product. So the coaches mobilized to enough of an extent to get this thing passed last year on a one-year trial basis, which is how a lot of the rule changes in the NFL come to be. One-year trial basis, and then the next year they vote on whether or not to keep it. Well, this year they never even voted on that. It never even came up. No one even proposed keeping it because, you know, if you watched last year, it was a disaster. I mean, there was no consistency to how it was enforced or applied It was very, very difficult to get one overturned. And I think everybody, even those who favored the pass interference replay, didn't like the way it was administered last year. So I think they're back to the drawing board now. But it's important to remember, the owners didn't want to expand replay. The coaches did. It all happened at a meeting in Phoenix, Arizona, where all the coaches and all the GMs and all the owners were together. It's a meeting they have every March. They didn't have that meeting this year because they can't have in-person meetings. So they had to cancel that one, like they've canceled a lot of off-season stuff. So there was no opportunity for everybody to get together and yell at each other and hash this out the way they did last year. So the owners, who never liked the idea in the first place, just kind of let it die on the vine. I think you'll continue to see and hear coaches push for expansion of replay review on a number of matters, including this one, in coming years. But this year, because how badly it went and because there was really no opportunity to discuss it because no one could get together, I think it's no surprise that it went by the wayside.
Dan, just how important do you think – one thing that you mentioned there, you said coaches – they'd be, I guess you can say, okay, just get the right call, right? For however long that would take, just get the right call. And then, of course, they're definitely, I think from a fan perspective, it's not just the NFL, you know, NBA obviously has a ton of replays, especially in the final couple minutes of a game. How important is it to just have a natural flow to the game? You know what I mean? Because I do think there are a lot of fans that sit back like, damn, it was such a good moment. Now we got to stop for 4 or 5 minutes.
That's how I feel personally. Like that, I'm very anti-replay. Like, I don't know if you had me on here to express my personal opinion, but
no, that's actually exactly why. Please,
I hate instant replay in all sports. I think it slows the game down. I think it's terrible. But I'm also a person that, like, I go to an NFL game. I'm working. I don't care which team wins, right? Mm-hmm. I just want to enjoy watching it and write a good story. And find out what's going on and report it back on TV. So I understand the perspective of a fan, let's say a Saints fan, that will forever feel like they were robbed of a Super Bowl appearance by a bad call. I get it. And that fan is going to say to me, and often does when I express this opinion, you're crazy, you're stupid, it's more important to get the call right. I just think, for me as an observer of the game, and I believe what you said is correct, I think a lot of people who watch sports do feel that they're watching it to be entertained and that stopping. Remember the national championship college basketball game last March? They, in the final minute, they had like a 5 minute replay review on a ball going out of bounds. That's not fun. And I think that when I talk about why the owners want to resist expanding replay review, that's the reason. They don't, their biggest fear is not the wrong team being in the Super Bowl. Their biggest fear is people don't want to watch their games anymore. So that has to factor into that decision, and it definitely does, and there's some push-pull on that, and I think the existence of replay review in sports tells you that the people who favor it, the coaches, players, et cetera, certainly have had some victories over the years, but they're not going to just get to the point where they're reviewing everything because, again, who would want to watch that?
Dan Graziano covers the NFL for ESPN, also an article right now on ESPN.com. How married are they to their starting quarterbacks or their starting quarterback? I just want to hit this just from a local perspective real quick.
Yeah.
Dan, we'll let you go after that. But for the Los Angeles Rams, and you know, ranked every single, not even ranked every team, but you gave, you know, obviously who the quarterbacks expected, how married is each team to their specific quarterback. This one might be an obvious one, but your thoughts on how married the Rams are to Jared Goff.
More than any team is to any other quarterback in the league. This is an interesting exercise. I think it's interesting. We started last year, just examining the contracts. Right. I'm not making a value judgment on like how committed they should be or how committed they say they are. I'm looking at the numbers, and I'm saying if the Rams wanted to get out of Jared Goff's contract, when's the soonest they could do it? If the Packers wanted to get out of Aaron Rodgers' contract, what's the soonest they could do it? If the Steelers wanted it, Ben Roethlisberger, et cetera, et cetera. And when you look at the money committed and the dead money cost for getting out of the deal, Goff's locked in there for really 3 more years. I mean, it would cost them more than $30 million in dead money to cut him in the spring of 2022. And by the way, he has $15.5 million in guaranteed money in that year, already guaranteed. So even if they were to cut him or trade him, they'd still be paying him that money. it 2 years from now. So studying all these contracts, that is one where the team is really, really committed for another couple of years to its starter. And I think that he gave Goff that contract, that they believe in him. But I think if Goff has a bad year and the Rams have a bad year, I think people will be saying to, well, how committed are they to Goff? When can they move on? The answer is not very soon, because they owe him. They have $27.5 million guaranteed to him in 2021. They have $15.5 million guaranteed to him in 2022. Technically, they could trade that contract, and it would be somebody else's responsibility, but hard to trade a contract when there's that much money committed, especially if a guy hypothetically in this situation is coming off a down year. So it's an exercise I enjoy doing. I do find out some interesting things from time to time when I do it about the contract. You know, Ben Roethlisberger's got one more year left in Pittsburgh. Like, that's it. If they have him beyond 2020, it's because they did another extension. So that contract they gave Goff is a whopper.
Okay, final one, just to get your thoughts and continue on your article, and greatly appreciate the time. How about the Chargers? How do you think they approach balancing their rookie, Justin Herbert, and obviously somebody that's a little bit more of a seasoned vet with Tyrod Taylor?
Yeah, I know for a fact that coaching staff, that front office, thinks very highly of Tyrod Taylor and would have no problem, you know, putting him in as the starting quarterback day one if they felt like Justin Herbert wasn't ready. There is widespread concern among all NFL teams about the ability to get rookies ready for this season in an offseason where they've already missed OTAs, they've already missed mini camps. We don't know what training camp's going to look like in terms of whether it's in person and how much. So you draft Justin Herbert, obviously he's the future there. That's their hope. They wouldn't have drafted him sixth overall. But if they feel like he's not ready, if they feel like Tyrod Taylor gives them a better chance to win games this year, I would not be at all surprised to see them play Taylor this year. I know they are very high on him. Anthony Lynn knows him from his Buffalo days. So they feel good about their quarterback situation, both in the short term and the long. We'll see. Tyrod's had a career where, you know, it's like he gets an opportunity and then something happens to take it away from him, right? Like it's Baker Mayfield in Cleveland or a coaching staff change in Buffalo to a staff that doesn't necessarily believe in him. And you know, he's got talent. He's been a lot of places. He's played some games. For goodness sake, he took the Buffalo Bills to the playoffs, which no one had done for, you know, a decade and a half. So he's got some resume and he's got some backers in that organization. So obviously Herbert's the guy long term, but if Tyrod Taylor plays a good chunk of their games this year, I don't think it would be a massive surprise.
Dan, fantastic, fantastic info there. I really appreciate it. Great insight, and we appreciate you taking some time and joining the show.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Great stuff there from Dan. It's funny, too, because Dan Graziano covers the NFL for ESPN. Never had him on before, and I know he's always done great work for obviously for ESPN, so it's good to have him part of the show. Last thing I want to do before we all call it a weekend, get our weekend started, just the final updates from the NBA, what the future is looking like, how much information we're going to get next week. Let's do all that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so hopefully everybody's got a great weekend in front of them. Will be interesting in LA, to say the least. Sounds like some restaurants under strict guidelines will be slowly trickling back with the ability to open. We got some, you know, information from the NBA earlier today as well, Board of Governors meeting, which Adam Silver has. It was 3 weeks ago today. Adam Silver said that he wanted to get more clarity on the NBA within 2 to 4 weeks. So it's been 3 weeks. We got a little bit more clarity today, but they are planning to vote this Thursday. And there's a lot of conversation. Woj, Ramona, and Zach Lowe have all done some work for ESPN where the word is owners are largely planning to pledge support for Silver's final recommendation on a plan, which teams expect to include invitations for 20 to 22 teams to resume the season. I can't tell you how much I'm hoping for to see more than just 16 teams get invited. I can't tell you how much I'm hoping for to see teams like the Portland Trailblazers, the Pelicans, the Sacramento Kings, the San Antonio Spurs. And if you expand that, let's say you go past 20 teams and you go to 22, throw in the Wizards and the Suns. I just named those off because Ramona, in one of her tweets earlier, talked about how teams that are within 6 games of a playoff spot would be invited to compete in a regular season games and then in a play-in tourney for the final spots. She mentioned that sources told ESPN. So I mentioned that strictly because of that. I those are the 6 teams that kind of fall under that category that are within 6 games, right? Something along those lines. Why I want to see that, I just think having a playoff before the playoffs would be unbelievable from a TV viewership perspective, from that perspective of getting that opportunity to see guys like Ja Morant and Devin Booker and CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, Zion Williamson, Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox. I could go down the list of all these unbelievably talented young players that we'd get to see them in some type of play-in tourney. It would just make for great TV. And I think at a time like now, from a sports perspective, the NBA, the more sports we got, I think it would only benefit them. I think it would obviously only benefit the league. And I'm saying that because I feel like a consumer, and I just use myself as an example, would be so incredibly interested in watching some type of a play-in tourney. And then we get, you know, obviously the Lakers, get the Lakers from there. So it sounds like by Thursday, that's when they'll vote this thing in. Quick reminder, Dr. Clapper tomorrow morning, Weekend Warrior from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. And then next week, Monday to Friday, we got the Sliwa show, but Monday will be Lakers talk specifically, 6:30 to 9. So we'll get a chance to do that. Thank you to Jesse. Thank you to Curtis. LA, as always, greatly appreciate you guys tuning in, and hope everybody has a great and safe weekend.